two widows make their way into an unknown future. They are resilient, but they need some help to come from somewhere. Here's Naomi, whose husband died along with her two sons, and Ruth, who had been married to one of the sons. They come from Moab, cross the river, and make their way to Naomi's hometown of Bethlehem. The place looked familiar to Naomi. She'd been here years before in happier times, before the drought and the financial collapse and their emigration to Moab and the deaths. Happier times seemed long away now. For Ruth, everything was new and a little scary. She was now the foreigner in a strange land. The road of life looks like it's come to a cul-de-sac for these two. The end of the road, the party's over, turn off the lights. If you want to find Naomi and Ruth in the future, don't bother. Their names, their stories, and their lives will disappear from any history that anyone knows or cares about. That's what you hear whispered about these two. It's reasonable. We can't see into the future, but we can make our best guess at what holds in the future for someone, often just by looking at them and seeing their situation. Looking at these two, a person would be forgiven for saying, move along. Nothing to see here. Let them be. Let them die. Let them be forgotten. But how much do you know about your grandmother and your great-grandmother? I know you've got one, more than one actually, but how much do you know? Have you listened to their stories? Have you imagined her way of life? My great-grandmother died when she was young and had young children. Her husband, my great-grandfather, couldn't afford to raise the children and work whatever meager jobs he could find, and so my grandmother grew up in and out of a state-run children's home in Georgia. When he had a little money, her father would come take her for a time to live back at home, but after a while, she'd be back at the children's home. Move along. Nothing to see here, just an orphan child who will hardly make it in the world. But she made it, my grandmother. She made it, grew up, became an elementary school teacher and a lifelong Sunday school teacher. Met and married her high school sweetheart. They had three children, one of whom had me. You have a story like that too. Jenny's great-grandmother was a child when her parents immigrated to America from Sweden. They made their way to northern Minnesota and through, we think, the Homestead Act, acquired rights to land wrapping around a small, isolated lake. By the time they arrived, a single Native American man lived on the land, his family all gone. With him, they shared the land and looked after one another. And then, in a farm accident, the father died. The Native American man looked after that family. He brought them game. They gave him supplies. It was this way until he died. Jenny's grandmother remembers him when she was a young child growing up there, as she did, walking across the frozen lake to school and back on those cold winter days. What will this girl become growing up way out there in the wilderness with a life like that? Well, she made it too. She grew up, trapped and cleaned animals, was named the first homecoming queen of their little high school, married a football coach, had five children, one of whom had Jenny. You have a story like that too. We all have grandma stories, whether we know them or not. Today on All Saints Day, we remember those kinds of stories of those kinds of people. Some are remarkable stories of remarkable people, like the stories of the saints the church recognizes having lived exemplary Christian lives. Others are just plain old making it in the world kind of stories. The world is full of both, full of grit and grace and wonderful stories. As we honor Joyce Franklin at the end of our service today, we remember a life lived with a lot of ordinary days and a whole lot of magnificent ones. A story of grit and grace and the people whom she loved and who loved her. Maybe they said that about Joyce too the day she arrived, a farm girl from the Midwest standing on the shores of Papua New Guinea with big dreams and a big heart. Maybe they whispered, "She's not going to make it here." But don't count her out. She has God, she has grit, and she has grace, and she has Carl too, and that's a lot. Don't count Ruth and Naomi out just yet either. If you think they're done for, you'd be so very wrong. You'd be overlooking, discounting, ignoring three things, just three things, but three that mean everything. You'd be overlooking the grit of these two. Grit goes a long way when you're desperate. And you'd be overlooking the grace of God. God's grace goes a long way too, much farther than you can imagine. And in overlooking both of those, you miss someone I think you'd like to meet. One person who changes the narrative, Boaz, the Redeemer. And before I introduce Boaz, I want to be sure you know this story isn't of two helpless women rescued by a man who swoops in to save them. Boaz is important to the story, no doubt. He's a good man. He's an important man. He's an important part of this story. This is a story about the women. Two widows, one elderly, the other a foreigner. It's a story of God and their lives. And only then is it a story about Boaz. Boaz is a part of it, even if he drags his feet for a long time. Boy, sometimes you just got to ask out the girl. The book's title and the main character is Ruth. But Ruth's story can't finally be told without Boaz. Just like all of our stories include the people who change our lives. Boaz changed Ruth's life and Naomi's too. Soon after they arrive with bellies empty, Ruth says she's going to find a field to glean so they have something to eat. Gleaners cleaned up fallen grains after the workers came through during the harvesting. Gleaning was hard, lonely work with only the meager hope to pick up off the dirt just enough to grind into making a loaf of bread for the day. It was also dangerous work for a young, immigrant, poor woman. Working men were all over the fields and sometimes were not honorable in their passions. Boaz, the field owner, noticed the young woman he'd not seen before and inquired about her, and they told him she's the Moabite woman who's come back with Naomi. Her husband died, and she's all alone. Boaz had compassion on her. He summoned her to come to his office, told her to stay in his field where she'd be protected. The working men were told not to touch her. The men were also told to let more than the usual amount happen to fall to the ground for gleaning. And if she's thirsty, she can come drink from the well with the workers. She was saved. And the crisis of hunger, loneliness, poverty, and hopelessness, she was shown what? What was she shown? What do we call this? Hospitality to the stranger? Certainly. It seems a little cold to call it hospitality to the stranger. What else might we call it? Compassion? Surely compassion. Boaz had compassion on her, protected her, gave her what she needed when she needed it. That's compassion. I don't know, though. It seems to go beyond compassion, which can seem a little patriarchal when it's a person in power extending it to a person who's powerless. This looks like love. Not even romantic love yet, though we'll get to that. Just love. The love of a person whose heart and resources go towards someone else just for love. And don't we need some of that in the world? Love from God who pours lavishly on us through the full heart of someone else just when we need it. And I think that's it. I think this is love. And I think Boaz loves her like God loves us. It's no wonder that he's called a redeemer. A redeemer in ancient Israel was a next of kin male who has the privilege and responsibility to marry the widow of his deceased kin. Now, so much of the cultural scaffolding of this is far lost to us, but you get the idea. A redeemer acts on behalf of someone else who was in trouble or danger or need. The redeemer rescues, redeems, vindicates the vulnerable at their most vulnerable. There are many appeals in the Old Testament to God in just these terms, as a rescuer of the weak and the needy. In a similar way in the New Testament, Christ is considered a redeemer because in our great need, he is the one who can help. Like Ruth, we are needy, and no matter how much grit we may have, we are in need of grace from the one who loves us. As our Redeemer, Christ does for us what we cannot do for ourselves. I don't think Boaz is a reluctant redeemer, but he's an awfully shy one. You would think that Boaz would follow up his compassion on Ruth with flowers or chocolates or an invitation to dinner, but you know, he's working. He's got a lot on his mind here at harvest season. But mostly it's because he doesn't think he has a chance with her. He sees himself, as Frederick Buechner puts it, as an old crock around so many young bucks in their tight-fitting jeans. Ruth makes it clear enough eventually. She picks Boaz. In Ruth's advance toward Boaz, she identifies him as an agent of God's provision, saying, "Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." In another cultural scene whose meaning is long lost to us, Ruth essentially proposes to him, "You big lug." Boaz just about trips over his uncovered feet with this good fortune. Boaz and Ruth marry, and they have a child, a son. If the story ended right there, it would be a marvelous fairy tale story. Rags to riches, lost to found, hopeless to hopeful, darkness to life, death to new life. That would be enough to serve as a parable of Israel's life in slavery in Egypt to homecoming in the Promised Land. A parable of Israel in exile in Babylon and then return. It would be a parable of our life under God's wings, under God's redemptive love and grace. But that's not even the end of the story. Just when you thought Naomi and Ruth had come to the end of their story, grit and grace have other plans for a future and a life. Just when you think this little book in the Bible has done all of its work, there's something more. Just a footnote at the end of the story, which returns us to our question, how much do you know about your grandmother? because the son of Boaz and Ruth was named Obed, who grew up and became the father of Jesse, who grew up and became the father of David, who grew up and became king of Israel. If you blink, you'll miss it. But when you open the first page of the New Testament and read the names of the ancestors of Jesus, alongside Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Judah, David and Solomon, those towering patriarchs, you'll find the name of a grandmother who had been widowed and poor and hungry and brave, a woman full of grit and grace, an immigrant named Ruth. Hail to our grandmothers of grit and grace, and to all who love them and are dearly loved by them. And honor to our God, in whom dead ends are never dead, and the end is often just the beginning of something amazing, something eternal, because our Redeemer, Jesus Christ, lives. Amen.